there was this moments that called me back to life. There was this moments that were very raw and beautiful. And so I write about that. I write about the all the things that make me who I am today. You know, I think most people look at my life and they think, oh, you know, she's a professor, she did this, she did that, but they have no idea the journey that we travel, right? They have no idea the stories. And so every time I meet someone, yeah, I think, oh, I wonder what their story is.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Alfredo González Valenzuela, and you are now at the Climate Frontline. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to the Climate Frontline podcast. You know, when I started this journey, I started to look at other podcasts out there who are doing this type of work, you know, around changing the narrative and really putting the microphone closer to those who are at the front line of climate change. And one podcast that stood out to me, and it was immediately a dream of mine to be a part of and collaborate with, was Latin Waves. And so I have had the opportunity to finally get in touch with someone who is doing this work. Her name is Sylvia Richardson, and she is with me here today. Welcome to the show, Sylvia.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, it's so great to have you be in the show. And I would, you know, first things first, I think for all my listeners, please check out her show. It's such an amazing place to just gather insights and as well as inspiration. Sylvia, would you just take a second to just quickly introduce yourself?
My name is Sylvia Richardson. I am of Mayan ancestry. My parents were what I describe as landless and poor. And in that life, I became an artist. I became someone who escaped war and found her way to the U.S., lived undocumented for several years. And through my many journeys, I have learned that what we really are is artists of our own life. And so, though now many people describe me as a professor, I have a PhD in arts education, I have been writing and I published a book, so some may call me an author. I really feel that what we are is love. What I am is love. And I share with people my heart. I share with people, you know, my vision for a world with justice. And I do that through my show, Latin Waves, which really is, it began as a little space to share stories about how we have been wounded by war, by displacement, through terrible disasters that are both economic, political, and ecological. And also, for me, the impetus was to create a space where we can dream a life beyond all that suffering and struggle. And so I see myself as an artist. I see myself as someone who creates art with everything that comes my way, the struggles, the challenges, the beauty, the friendships. Everything is useful. Everything serves us, and we can create beautiful things in all circumstances.
Yeah, I love that you come from a place of love. I think for me, one thing that comes to mind for me with love is when people from Mexico come to visit Peru and I meet them, or what is now modern day, what they refer to as Peru and what they refer to as Mexico, right? When I had the chance to go visit some of the places where the Maya peoples lived, it was all love. From the food to how you're greeted, to how the kids treat you. And I even got lost in one spot and this kid helped me out, and it was all love from beginning to end. So really appreciate you sharing that. And and coming into this place. And one thing I also really like about your show is that you're really intentional about the diction you use, and even, you know, as far as going, you know, referring to what we call today Canada, what we call today the United States, not just saying it America or like United States, because there's a loss of history that happens there, right? You know, tell me a little bit about this word, the flesh mapping. What does that mean to you, and why is that important?
So I wrote my book, Flesh Mapping, in 2013. It was published in 2013. It was my intention in the name is to recognize that we are all form, you know, we're all flesh, right? We all have carbons and protons and energy, but we're also stories, you know, and flesh mapping is my way of noticing how the multiple wounds we have suffered, you know, be it war, be it violence, be it abuse, be it neglect, feeling abandoned, feeling both, you know, abandoned by perhaps parents who work so hard, they miss, you know, being with their children. We have so many women having to work, tending to other people's kids, and their own children are locked up, you know. When I was a kid, my mother used to lock us in our little room, and she would go to work. And if there was a fire, there was nowhere escaping. The house had little bars, as most homes do in this, you know, in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And so we had, you know, a little, Anika, a little pot you could pee on if you had to go pee, but everything else you had to wait. And so it is those stories that have informed how I see the world, and that mapping of, you know, of being those wounds get stuck in our on our skin, you know, our fascia, right? Yeah. So beneath the skin, there's all these stories of woundings and of places where we have lost little pieces of ourselves. And also, I think, and also those very places where we've been wounded is places where light also enters us. You know, we also become aware, awake to the world. I always say that activists are not made. We are in many ways born to very difficult circumstances. We're born to places that have required people to make life, you know, out of thin air, you know, to create miracles on a daily basis, because you have no idea how you're going to feed all your kids. You have no idea how you're going to keep them from dying, from dysentery, from drinking poison water. All of the things that are the challenges that many people in the global South face. So for me to acknowledge that I come from the land of Avyayala, you know, the land that before colonization was known as Avyayala, that to many of our indigenous people is still Avyayala. And so to recognize that I am now a guest in Turtle Island, this is North America to many people, but to me it's still Turtle Island. And so it's a responsibility to not only learn the language of the people where you are coexisting and sharing your life, your gifts, but also to be aware of our responsibility, the responsibility of our own history, our own stories, our own ways of seeing the world. Because how we see the world affects how we walk and act upon the world. If the world is a place where we are constantly being frightened, you know, we act with fear, and fearful people create a lot of harm. A lot of hurtful things. And so our journey in my life has been to not only learn to befriend my own fears, because fear is not going away. We're always going to have things to be, you know, that frighten us. Hunger is very frightening, you know, for those of us who know hunger intimately, it's a very frightening thing. You know, war is terrifying, and violence is just part of the landscape that some of us have had to coexist with. And so facing the place where we are, honoring how far we have traveled, honoring all the stories of the people who have hold our hand, you know, at times just a warm embrace is all you need to keep going. You know, it's I have a very strong commitment to community and connection, because my mother always said community is immunity, you know, and anyway, that's how we survive war. That's how you survive through disasters. That's how you survive, is by communing with others, by being in connection with others. And I feel that there are two essentials in life, and that is freedom and connection. We need to feel free to make choices. And that freedom seems elusive, you know, when we're faced with a world that has seen almost the naturalization of exploitation. You know, it's almost been naturalized that there is very poor people and there's very wealthy people. And there seems to be this almost, you know, it's like, it's just the way it happens. Well, how? You know, as a child, I always wonder how is it? You know, how do things work? I was a very curious child all my life. And as I was forced to face life at a very young age, my parents were both left for dead, but when I was 9, and I was forced to grow up very fast. And all of those moments that have forced me to face the stark reality of where I am, and yet still cultivate innocence, an innocence that maybe something else is possible. Maybe something else could still be born out of this seed that has been compromised. And I see our life as that, you know, little seeds. We're all tiny seeds, but we have within us all the potential. You know, in Latin America, the ceibas are these amazing trees. They're called a magical tree for the Mayan people, because their roots go so far deep into the ground that we say touches the center of the earth. But their branches go way up to the sky. And so there is this connection between sky and center of the earth. And so we're always, you know, within one seed, there's the potential to grow, to expand, to elevate, and to bear fruit, to nourish others, to feed others. So to me, flesh mapping is self-locating. You know, when I write about the stories of my own woundings, you know, when I share with you my heart, my hope is that others will feel a connection to their own heart, to their own stories. Because war does two things. It does many things, but for me, what it did is it silenced me. You know, it taught me the art of being invisible. My mother survived. My father died. You know, they were both left for dead, but she survived. And I remember her looking at me before I went to school. She would like study me, you know, just almost as if she was memorizing every crevice, every freckle, and because she wanted to make this picture that would be indelible, that could not be lost by a fire, that could not be lost by losing your photograph. It was ingrained in her mind what I look like, what I smell like. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, to know that you're sending your kids out to go to school in the middle of a war, and you don't know if they're coming back, and you don't know if, and that reality was just where we were, you know. And it was embraced in many ways with a bit of a humor, a bit of creativity. My uncle is a poet, and he would, you know, read his poems to us at night. We didn't have electricity because, well, first we lived in the outskirts of town, you know, as many people do. And so we didn't have light, but we would have a fire, and he would read. I imagine he would just reciting from memory what he had written. But it was these moments that also remind me that despite the war and the fear that paralyzes us and sometimes causes us to freeze, to become cold to others, to become indifferent to pain, to become, you know, desensitized, right? There was this moments that called me back to life. There was this moments that were very raw and beautiful. And so I write about that. I write about all the things that make me who I am today. You know, I think most people look at my life and they think, oh, you know, she's a professor, she did this, she did that. But they have no idea the journey that we travel, right? They have no idea the stories. And so every time I meet someone, yeah, I think, oh, I wonder what their story is.
Yeah.
I wonder what stories within, you know, this person, right? And universities are interesting places because these are people who we describe as privileged, right? A lot of these people will say, oh, you know, they have either race privilege. You know, a lot of white people do get to go to university.
Mm-hmm.
Or that there's a lot of white people in North America who are extremely poor and displaced and, you know, also have those markings. And so to me, it's more than just seeing who that person is in this moment. When I listen to someone, I want to see, I want to hear in between the lines what they say, of how careful they are with their words and how messy they are, you know, and discover little pieces, right?
Absolutely.
And that's the exciting part. So in flesh mapping, I'm doing that. I'm inviting you to map your own journey, to map, you know, your own moments where you've lost little pieces. And the reason we do it is so we can gather them, right? So we can gather back those pieces and be whole again. In indigenous circles, we say that if this is your land, where are your stories? You know,
mm-hmm.
your stories. So when you go to a place, you want to learn the story so you can respond with respect, you know, so you can be humble, you know, by the places that you don't know. You know, there are so many things we don't know. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And in so many ways, unlocking those pieces within ourselves allow us an ability to connect with others, to be more authentic, you know, to be open, to be trusting of ourselves, you know, because when you look at your life, you think, wow, I've survived this. I did that. Oh, of course, this looks scary. I can do that, you know. I can figure it out. And we engage life with more of a beginner's mind, and we engage life with more of a sense of there'll be people along my journey that will help me. I'll meet someone along the way. And so it's that way that we can not only nourish our own seed and, you know, cultivate this beautiful plant that is our life, but we also bear fruit. We also begin to learn that we can be artists in our own life, that we can be co-creators with others. And imagine, not only imagine, but actually create beautiful places.
Yeah, a different world is possible, right? Like you say in the show. Yeah, I think what resonates with me is how much just those words brought up for you, right? Like it's not just two words. And I think language allows us to connect with each other, but there's also a difference between the written language, and then there's just language that's just stories that may not be captured in books, stories that just live in people's memories, in abuelita's minds, and they just never get captured in words, right? And I think for me, one thing I'm curious about is that you've been doing this show for over a decade, right? So you have hundreds of stories that you've exchanged or heard. And I'm curious to know, how have you understood language in that experience? Do these folks you engage with, you know, they're engaging in some way, shape, or form around these injustices, whether it's environmental, social, economic, right?
So the Latin ways began as a very local effort. So I was I became very active within the union movement because I find that we need organized ways to not only move forward ideas of social justice and social betterment, but we also need to have a way to you know, channel those ideas, right? It's wonderful to go to a march and to see a sea of people, you know, walking together, trying to stop the war, right? Like the war in Iraq. I was in Vancouver and I went to the march and I brought my babies and everybody had music and we had dancers and it was a sea of people. You can see it for miles. It was just a gorgeous exploration. But to me, it's also important to have words, right? To have a theory. Now, there's a lot of, I've gone through many journeys, you know, and part of me is like to create culpable people. Who are the guilty ones? How did neoliberalism, right? This very blunt instrument of oppression, you know, know what neoliberalism means. It meant a systematic way of dismantling, you know, taking apart all the social systems that we had created through struggle, right? Through centuries in Latin America, the last 100 years, U.S. different countries, you know, many people call the murder of Salvador Allende and how that in 1973 that led to this unleashing of terror throughout Latin America. We talk of the dirty wars in Central America in the 1980s, where when I was a child in El Salvador, you know, it meant the death squads and it meant, you know, genocides that will go unnamed and unheard of because some people's lives are invisibilized in life and they go invisibilized in death. You know, they're not even a marking on the back of the newspaper. So in so many ways, language is important because when you hear the word neoliberalism, most of our people who are affected don't know that word, don't use that word in their daily conversations, right?
Absolutely, yeah. They may have stories to share, but they don't refer to it as that, yeah.
We express the symptoms, you know, we talk about the symptoms and what has happened when you have, you know, trade agreements that completely destroy the local economy.
Would you please share a message or a story, you know, whichever is most appropriate for youth who may be listening to this podcast? What is your message to them?
Never be afraid to make a mistake. You know, all my life has been a series of stumbling and falling and picking myself up. But I want to give you, we can do anything. We can do hard things, all of us. When I was in the States, I enrolled myself in high school. At the time, the U.S. didn't have any, legal language that prevented immigration from going into high schools to remove kids who were undocumented. And so my parents had always believed that education was important. So I enrolled myself in high school. And it was really, it was both exciting to be able to go to school and it was both heartbreaking because many of the school that I was in had many children who were in gangs. And of course, you know, to survive, you join a gang. And yeah. I find that it was disastrous because a lot of the teachers were not there to teach. They had already lost their power. They didn't think they could make a difference. And so the kids didn't believe. So if you want to be a leader, if you want to lead others, if you want to make a difference in this world, you first need to trust yourself. You first need to act as if, you know, you already know what you're going to do. We all need that. You know, the heart of a warrior is that, a spiritual connection, to your soul, to your heart, knowing the depth of you that you are someone special. Did you know that there's one in 400 trillion chances that you and I were born? Like that, those are the odds. Like there's one in 400 trillion that you may not had ever existed. But because you did come to be this person, you know, you are a miracle. Like you're a freaking miracle and you can do anything. You can literally do anything with your life. But first you have to trust yourself. You know, I remember the day I left high school. I dropped out of high school because there was a gang after me, and it was terrifying. And I had seen enough violence to know when it's time to go. Mm-hmm. And I gave up school, and I thought, for a while, I thought that dream was gone. So I found my way to serving others in different ways. And I, as I mentioned to you, I started by participating in the co-creation of the Center for Refugees. And then we opened a food bank, and then we did all kinds of things. And someone said to me, I'm moving to Canada. And I said, what's Canada? You know, where is Canada? And he says, well, you know, you should apply and you should do this. And so I did. I sent my application, and not only did I send it to Canada, I went through the ABC, and I found all these very interesting countries that I thought I would like to live in. Letter to all of them. And of course, they all said no. So never be afraid of the word no. They all said no, including Canada. Canada said no. And but because I have been in the community doing all this work and meeting people, a friend saw my letter of rejection, and he said, what's this? I said, oh, I'm applying to this country. And they said no. And he says, he says, this is amazing. He says, why don't you appeal it? I didn't know you could do that. What? You get second chances? What should you do? So I went back, and I actually, this time I didn't write. I was courageous. I walked in and I said, I would like to meet the counselor, you know, and whatever. and I met with this person, and I just told him, I said, look, I said, you don't know me, and you probably don't think that you should trust me. I said, but I am someone who's going to make things happen. I can do things. And I just talked a little bit about my experience. And, you know, about a week later, I got a letter saying, we would love for you to come to Canada, and we will pay for your ticket to get there, you know. And so I moved to Canada. And when I got here, things were not easy. You know, they were hard and horrible. The people were cold and the climate was terrible. It was winter. I'd never seen snow. The first 10 seconds was...
yes.
But after that, you're like freezing. So I, you know, and yet again, right? I can do hard things, you know? Yeah. And I was like this one brown person in a sea of white in a place that didn't understand me. And so they fear me, right? Like, we have to understand the racism is also people who are frightened by what they don't know. You know, it's their fear that is pushing them, right? And so we want to make sure that we don't become what we abhor, that we don't become racist in the process of protecting against racism, right? It's a double-edged sword, but we have to be careful of that. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to make friends by opening the first pupuseria, you know, pupusa.
Yes.
Central America. And I thought, I'm going to open this pupuseria, and they're all going to love my food, and I'm going to make so many friends.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I went and bought the food. I did all the work, and nothing, you know, no one came and no one was coming. So I thought, okay, well, they don't know where I am, and they don't know what pupuseria is. Yeah. So I went to the church, and I said, you know, I have this great place, and maybe after church I could sell my pupusas at the church. And
yeah.
They didn't do that in Canada. They have big no-nos around, you know, just opening your own store wherever.
Yeah.
And but again, you know, by this time I was 18, and I hadn't yet known or learned that failure wasn't part of it. I just assume, you know, if you fail, you just try again, right? If this doesn't work, you do something else. Yeah. And so it has been this ability to not beat myself up every time I fail or every time someone says no, to be able to move. Eventually, I moved out of that town because it seemed like I couldn't make things happen. So I moved to another town, and there I discovered that I could get a membership at the gym. And if I work out, if I taught a class, they give me a free membership, and I had no money. So I said, I could teach a class. And then, oh, you're an aerobic instructor. I said, yes. And they said, well, I said, salsa aerobics. I'm an awesome dancer. So I literally started teaching these people salsa. And that was it was such a popular class. And for me, this language, right? I had this very deep insecurity that my words would not come out right, that I had an accent, that people would not understand me. And so I kept throwing myself into situations where I had to speak the language. I had to practice my language.
Yeah.
I had to practice being laughed at. And, you know, people would say, oh my God, that's so funny. You said chew, you didn't say shoe, you know, and all of these little things that people would pick up on. But yet being there taught me yet another lesson. You need to move your body. Your body needs to be in motion. When we're in motion, we're powerful. We're not only do we grow strong, but we're also all our knowledge, what we think we know, is not in our heads. It's in our body. You know, our body has wisdom. And so I taught this class for a while. I became an aerobic instructor. I actually took the training after. And you know, doing things backwards. But they loved me so much, they just looked the other way. So you just have to do the training, okay? So I did the training. I did that. And then I thought, I would love to have, you know, a good job. I would love to have a job where I don't have to feel insecure. I worked in so many sweatshops, you know, being in different places. And I felt I wanted a job where I had rights. I had, you know, maybe even a union, who knew? And so someone says, you know, you're not going to get a good job if you don't have an education. You need to get your high school. So I went back and I went back to school. I took night courses and my teacher said, you know, you're really mature for, you know, you should, I know you're only 18, but you're really mature. You should apply to university. I didn't know you could do that. He said, I said, well, I don't have high school. He said, well, apply as a mature student. So I did. I thought, oh, that sounds good. So I applied to the university and of course they said no. and I thought of my friend and I thought of how I got to kind of thought, I'm just going to appeal this, you know? So I went back and I appealed my letter. And this poor guy was like so tired by the time I said, I could pay for the courses. You didn't even have to let me in. I could just do the courses. And if I don't make the master, then you can kick me out, you know? And I was like so relentless. It's like, oh. He says, look, he says, it doesn't work that way. Well, look at your consideration. And so I got all these letters from all the people that I have worked with, you know, the people I work with, you know, creating a refugee center, the women I was serving,
Momentum.
Right? All these people who knew who I was and could speak for me, maybe better than I could speak about myself at the time. Because the reason I wanted to go to university was to learn language, to learn to express myself in a way that I could feel and sound the way I felt, powerful, to collect my own power. And so I got into university and I won't lie to you, I failed almost every single course I took the first semester. And thankfully, there's always angels everywhere. There was a lady at the registrar and she loved me. She knew, I met with her and I shared my story and we talked and she just knew my heart. And she said, you know, before you fail the course, you might want to consider withdrawing. Otherwise, they might kick you out of the university. And she said, just focus on one course and do really well at that one. And I was like, but I'm paying all this money. I want to get 5 courses. I felt I had to give value for my money. She says, I know, sweetie. She says, but you first have to do really well so you can stay here. If you fail your courses, you won't be able to stay. And I took her advice. I dropped all the courses that I was deep failing. I was definitely going to get an F. I withdraw from them and I managed to stay. I got one course and I took, of course, I had to take the hardest course. I was like, well, I could do philosophy. I could do anything. Well, I'm doing philosophy. I'm not giving that one up. And I did. I stuck with that course. I actually majored in philosophy. My first degree was in philosophy. And that led me to a full journey of really contemplating how we co-create life, you know. And so I talk about this to tell you not to ignore the fact that we live in a neoliberalist era where education is very expensive, where, you know, tuition is off the roof. And sometimes, you know, we minimize the significance struggle that is, right? But I tell you that. For me, university was one way. I could have done this other ways, right? I could have learned English by, you know, maybe being surrounded by people who only spoke English. I could have learned English by reading more books, which I did, by the way. You know, doing philosophy meant that I had to read 3 textbooks, not one, right? I had to read one translating my words into Spanish and one that translated the words from Spanish to English. And, you know, there was a whole process.
You know, one thing that came to my mind as you were sharing that it was my first day in school in the United States, because I arrived and, you know, I knew how to say hello and food and goodbye, you know, and I approached all of the women, you know, all of the girls in my class, and to every single one of them, I went up to them and gave them a kiss in the cheek, you know, a kiss in the cheek. Hola, my name is Alfredo. And months later, I came to find out that all of the girls thought that, you know, I was interested in them. And, you know, this clash of cultures was just so interesting and so vivid that I never forget that moment, you know. And that's to say that, I think you shared a lot of hope lessons for youth, even with your story. Thanks for being in the show again. I would love to just take a second to send a message to our gente, you know, who are out there, who may be listening to this. I'll start off, and please join me if you could. Mi nombre es Alfredo González Valenzuela, y a toda la gente del Alto Perú, a toda la gente de Sudamérica, en cualquier país que estén, sé que hay muchas injusticias allá, y solo les quiero acá enviar un mensaje con mi amiga Silvia desde acá, desde Norteamérica, diciéndoles que los vemos, los escuchamos y no nos olvidamos de ustedes. Así que un abrazo fuerte desde distancia y por favor cuídense, que el futuro va a tener otras promesas y ojalá que nos podamos ver pronto.
Sí, un abrazo a todos, porque la vida es vida, la vida siempre nos llama, y en todo lo que estamos en este momento, ya sea que estén en sus casas porque COVID es una pandemia seria, o por si están ayudando a otros, o por si estamos cuidando los niños, cuidando la tierra, un abrazo y gracias por sus historias. Cuídense y adelante.
Thank you so much, Silvia, for being in the show. If you are interested in hearing our conversation at Latin Waves, I will leave a link on that conversation on the show notes. So please go check that out. Thank you so much, Silvia, for joining me today.
Thank you again. And for people who would like to know more about me, my book, Flesh Mapping, is titled Flesh Mapping, Cartography of Struggle, Renewal and Hope in Education. And it's my heart, you know, poured into pages, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you'd like to learn about my show, it's latinwaysmedia.com. And you can also go to my podcast, The Art of Living, which is a brand new podcast I recently started about education and self-discovery, how we find a way through challenges and learn that we can do hard things, and there's always a messy middle in everything, you know. So don't get stuck. Don't get stuck when you fall. Pick yourself up. Go stand near a tree. You know, go to the water if you're near water, and know that you are supported. There were others before you, and there will be others behind you. So be a good ancestor. Thank you.
Hey, I hope you joined this conversation as much as I did. Sylvia is a really amazing individual, and I just ordered her book, so I'm excited to read Flesh Mapping. I wanted to give a quick shout out to a few fans and give them some appreciation for the feedback they've been giving me. Shout out to Catherine, to Amanda, Lorena, to Alina. A shout out to Ali, Mauricio, Thomas, Peter, Montserrat, and Emily. One last thing that I would ask you is, I'm trying to come up with a name for the community, the following, the familia that I'm building here through this podcast and overall in this journey of life, right, on these topics that I'm really passionate about. And I'd be curious to know, what is the name that you would give to these individuals? I have some in mind, but I would love to hear yours. The communities who are experiencing the worst effects of climate change are those who are best positioned to innovate solutions. Thank you for tuning in and being part of Changing the Narrative. See you next time at the Climate Frontline.